Welcome back to episode 3 of the Horsepower Hour, and I'm Clayton Dushek, host of The Dirt Show, along with my co-host here on the Horsepower Hour, Ben Beeney, owner of Sorensen's Appliance Repair, who is also an asphalt modified driver and a snowmobile racer himself. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you for having me tonight, Clayton.
Our first guest tonight is snowmobile drag racer Donna Davidson. Welcome on this very cold night.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Donna, let's dive right in here. Wisconsin is a hotbed for snowmobile and snowmobile racing. What are your first memories of snowmobiling?
Oh, my first memories. Excitement. A little bit of shocking because I always wanted to be a racer, but not snowmobile racing. So when I had the opportunity, it was exciting.
Great.
When and how did the idea of racing down an ice drag strip come about? Because that's not what your average person thinks about when you talk racing, like you just mentioned.
That was Kenton Strand's idea. He and I were talking about what types of racing we wanted to do and collaborated. We tried snow racing, snow tracks, straight drags, but then we tried ice straight drags and we decided to stay with that.
Donna, my daughter is racing quarter midgets. What hurdles did you encounter as a pioneer when you came into the scene as a female in a male-dominated sport?
I'm glad you asked that. For me, it really, there wasn't any challenges. Because my focus, when I got to the races, my focus was just like everybody else, every other racer, and that was to focus on that tree, that green light, and go and win and do the best I could.
How did you get connected with Strand Enterprises?
Well, I've known Kenton Strand for many years. I knew him through a snowmobile club that we all had joined, and from there he found out that I had that dream one day of racing, and it just evolved from that aspect.
So Donna, talk about the phaser that's on display at the Snowmobile Hall of Fame in St. Germain, Wisconsin. That sled has a special meaning and a special name, correct?
Correct. That was my very my second trail sled. And it got sold because I wanted to move up into the trail sledding future. And it came back. We kind of kept track. It was kind of near and dear to me. And when I found out that Kenton purchased it back years later, that's when he approached me about racing it. And so that became the very first race sled. And the story behind it, we've named all of our race sleds, the ones that I race. That particular race sled, I was throwing beanbags one day. Don't know what the name, corn husk, I think it's called, or corn.
Cornhole.
Cornhole.
There you go.
And my grandson was small at the time, and he couldn't pronounce Norwegian because I'm a little bit Norwegian.
Sure.
So all he could say was Norgin. And therefore, that was a great name for the phaser.
Awesome.
So it stuck.
So what color and what year? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes. It's a 1991 Yamaha Phaser 2. It's under 500 cc's. It's a fan-cooled Yamaha. And the colors are red, white, and black.
Perfect. Thank you.
You drag race and compete in 12 classes. What is your favorite class and why?
Oh, my. That's a great question. My favorite classes are non-stock. Anything non-stock. So the mod, so 600 mod, 700 mod, 800 mod, all the way up to outlaw, The reason for that is because out of all the five of the snowmobiles that I race, the only non-stock sled is a 2000 Yamaha SRX 600cc. And I can't explain it, but when I get on that sled, it's like we're one and one goal only. And we go down and we go down to win. I can't explain it.
Nope,
but it's such
it's a good
an exhilarating feeling.
Well, most drag races are won at the line. Your reaction times are a fraction of a second. Is that a natural gift, or can you teach yourself to be faster and faster?
You know, I do. One of the things that I do is I practice on a computer with a tree. That's the only thing I do. Other than that, it just comes to me, I guess.
You also have nerves of steel. Watching a video of you exploding off the line and seeing your sled pulled to the right or left and you never lift. It is a thing of beauty to see you pull that sled back straight and keep right on going.
Well, thank you.
What does that feel like when you're only a few feet away from your opponent?
When I'm going down the track, I'm just, my focus is right straight ahead. I don't see the other person until I get to the end, because in my mind, we got to get there the best way we know how. And the adrenaline is explosive because I'm there to do a job for my team. They've helped me get there, and I can't do it without them. And that's so important to every racer, you know, your pit crew and everybody that's helped you get there to succeed.
You can always look back once you beat them.
Yes. Yes, you can.
So speaking of beating them, five-time ISR World Series class champion, the Curtis Snowmobile Drag Race champion 2 years in a row, King of the Bay champion 2 years in a row, and first female snowmobile ice drag racer recipient of the High Points Ice Award. Those are some outstanding accomplishments. Why don't you go ahead and fill us in on those?
Well, when we show up at the races, we have a lot of fun, but that changes on the racetrack, meaning, you know, it becomes more of the serious, obviously. But I couldn't do it with everybody involved. My sponsors who puts the sleds together and makes them run top end. I mean, they're phenomenal. I've been very blessed with a lot of my sponsors. As I mentioned before, the crew, the team, they have all helped me get to that winning podium. And in 2015, that was a really, really great year for us. And that's, I was at the first time at the ISR World Series of Snowmobile Ice Drags, first time there winning two of the ISR championships in the classes that I raced in. And the weekend before that, that's when I won the High Points Award. And I just, you know, I just love the sport so much that you keep going. And every time somebody's got to lose, somebody's got to win, and I've lost also, you know. that makes you appreciate the win so much more.
Heart and passion. I mean, it's something
exactly.
You become one with.
Exactly.
With 60 titles to date, you can't do it without great sponsors, and you mentioned you have some on board. Who are those sponsors?
Oh, we, of course, Strand Enterprises, Kenton Strand, who believed in me from day one. He's the owner, as I mentioned before, and Hauk Power Sports, Patrick Hauk, VP Racing Fuel, Team Woody's, Camso, NGK, Gates G-Force, American Family, Insurance Associates, Amsoil, USI Ski, Edward Jones, Wiseco, Fox, Shocks, U.S. Chrome, Tom Lowe's Photography is amazing, Anheuser-Busch, Northern Chill, that's a water company. You got to have water, right, to be hydrated.
Absolutely.
Pete's Trailer Sales, Powder Plus, DECA Batteries, and Grody Lights, Castle X, Fly Racing, Blaine Brothers, and then there are so many more that I hope I haven't left out, but other people behind the scenes, such as Yamaha Corporation, the pit crew and team, of course, and the volunteers that help us to be successful. It's a combination. It's a, for every racer, your sponsors and your team and the volunteers that help you reach those goals that you have is a winning combination for any racer, and all racers know that. We can't do it with anybody.
I think Ben's eyes lit up when you said Anheuser-Busch. I think he wants him on his asphalt car.
It's almost too cold for that right now.
Well, see, now there's a story behind that too. They do our banners. They have an amazing, I work with their department, their creative department and design, and we have a banner inside of our trailer that says thank you sponsors, and we have all of our sponsors listed on that banner, and then on the other length of the trailer on the inside are pictures that we have. So they do an amazing job for us.
And that's a very impressive lineup for sponsors. Those are some real big names. So very impressive.
Well, I've been very fortunate and thankful.
Yep. So, Donna, you also do some acting and make numerous public appearances for your sponsors.
Yes. Well, the acting part, I've done movies, but I've also done plays. And that helps me with public speaking, believe it or not. That's how I look at it. And so when I'm at plays, I'll be promoting, like, the Northern Trail Water, or I'll be talking about racing. And if people are interested, then they ask me questions, which in turn I do promoting of whatever they're asking me about. Maybe they're snowmobiling on the trail and their belt breaks down. Well, what kind of belt would you suggest? Well, Gates G-Force. So I'm always promoting, and our whole team actually promotes all year round. And we do parades, a lot of parades during the summer. Not so much these last couple of years because of the COVID, of course. But we believe that the children and the young people are our future. And to give them a chance, we'll come in. We've been asked to come in and set up our trailer with the race sleds. They can come in. They can look at them. They can sit on them, they can have pictures, ask us questions, anything they want, and we're there to help them. And you should see some of the looks on their eyes. Their eyes just get really big, their smiles, and they become interested, because for some of these children, that may be the only chance they get to get up close and personal with a sled.
And, you know, speaking of that, that's why I'm a huge fan of, I don't have one myself, but open trailers. When you travel down the road with a stock car in the back with an open trailer, it's for the kids. They see that, they get jacked up, they get excited, interested. And yes, the kids, they're our future. I mean, that's what we have to rely on.
Oh, absolutely.
Donna, where can fans see the number 28 snowmobile race this winter?
Our first race is at Lake Wissota Snowmobile Drags in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, on February 5th. And right now, tentatively, after that, it's the ISR World Series of Ice Drags, Battle of the Bay on Ice. And right now, the location is to be announced. But that would be February 18th through the 19th. But then also our trailer will be at the Ride with the Champs event at the Snowmobile Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I'm not going to be inducted, but but they asked me to come and sign autographs there. And it gives a chance for anybody to come that Saturday to ride a trail with former inductees and the current inductees going to be inducted that night. And it's a blast. It's an all-day thing in St. Germain, Wisconsin. And it's a fun time. You just kick back and ride the trails, beautiful trails up there.
So the biggest accomplishment so far in your career, whether it's influencing a young woman to race, a huge win, or just achieving a personal goal, what is it for you?
Probably just getting the opportunity to finally reach one of my dreams. I have to chuckle a little bit because my graduation, the motto was, our realities are the dreams of tomorrow. And our dreams of today are the realities also of tomorrow. So right now, that's coming true for me. It started in 2012, and it's still continuing. To see that happen, I can't believe it sometimes, really. I'm just so thankful.
What's really neat is we see more and more and more females going into all types of motorsports, and it's really cool to see. And I'm sure the young girls that you meet out at these events are just, wow, there's a lady racing that sled.
You know, when I see them, that's another reason why we started doing the parades, because when I'm in the pit and racing, I'm pretty busy. The team's pretty busy. And I feel bad because, in a way, because I can't talk to the fans, and I want to talk to them and, you know, appreciate them and show them that I appreciate and the team appreciates them coming. So when we started doing the parades and the events, the benefits, showing up there, it put a whole new different level on everything, because the parents were starting to talk to us more and more. And, you know, we've had a lot of different up-and-coming young racers, both male and female, come up and talk to us. Not just me, but the team, with questions. And that's a chance that a lot of times people don't get either, because they want to know, how do you get, you know, a lot of the common questions, how do you get into it? Who should you have for sponsors? How do you get the sponsors? I sent my resume to a little girl about 3 years ago, and I said, you can copy my resume, just put in, you know, drop in what applies to you, because how else are they going to know?
Right.
So, you know.
Well, I believe you're a huge inspiration to the snowmobile world, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Donna, thank you so much for being with us here on the Horsepower Hour, and good luck in the 2022 racing season. I can't wait to follow your accomplishments coming up in February.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Donna. Have a good night.
You too.
We are back with our second guest here on the Horsepower Hour, and we are joined by Brian Hulbert. And Brian, I appreciate you taking the time to join us right now. You have got to be the busiest man on the planet right now, January 10th through the 15th. The greatest midget race in the world is back, the 36th annual Chili Bowl. Most of the fans have the luxury of kicking back and watching this incredible event from the comfort of their recliner. When do Chili Bowl preparations actually start for you? Because it is a huge undertaking.
Chili Bowl preparations actually never stop. We're constantly going over, reviewing. I mean, once we get done, tickets actually go up for renewal the first Wednesday of March. So, you know, they're, as far as preparing for the event, there never is any time off.
Hey, Brian, it's Ben here. Nice taking time out for us. We appreciate that. And it sounds like you're approaching a record for a car count this season. We're hearing something around 350 midgets.
We're at 394 entries as of tonight.
Wow.
That is incredible. I've been watching some of the logistics on Facebook. It's so interesting. Switching out and then getting ready for the Chili Bowl, you had something like 1,500 haulers parked outside waiting to be parked, and then to get them all out of the building and get ready for the next weekend.
Yeah, the Tulsa shootout was crazy this year. We had over, you know, 1,700 entries received. Just shy of 1,700 of those actually checked in, and, you know, 359 individual races and 3,418 competitive green flag laps later. it was a heck of a week. It was long, but it was a lot of fun. There was some absolutely fantastic racing, and you know, if it wasn't for events like the shootout, the Chili Bowl actually wouldn't exist. That's the event that gave rise to the Chili Bowl.
Brian, I know you're not only a promoter, but you are a huge fan and a fan of the history behind the sport. And the history behind this race, my friend Johnny Parsons III and his father Johnny Parsons Jr. raced the 1988 Chili Bowl. And drivers come from all over the world in all types of racing to take a shot at Chili Bowl glory. And it's just amazing to see these drivers come from everything from drag racing to motocross and jump in a midget and give it a try.
That's one of the neat things about the event. It's a melting pot of talent. And like you said, it's, you know, you've got them from, you know, drag racing and everywhere else. Where else can you go see your World of Outlaws champion, plus your All-Star champion, plus your ASCS champion, take on your Lucas Dirt late model champion, your NASCAR champion, plus a guy who is a professional archer, plus somebody who's a professional bicyclist who just happens to be a racer. You know, and racing in itself, and I've said it for years, is an everyman's sport. Whether you have no collar, a blue collar, or a white collar, there's something for everybody in racing, and we have that where, you know, we have competitors that are doctors, lawyers, nurses, mechanics, truck drivers. You know, it's everybody.
Hey, Brian, let's switch gears for a second. Events surrounding the Chili Bowl. There is a trade show going on. Are there any other social events going on at or around the show?
They have the RC Chili Bowl, and I haven't seen much on it, but to tell the truth, I haven't really looked for it because we've just had so much going on. But that's something that's kind of neat that they do out here on the grounds is the RC Chili Bowl. I haven't seen if they're doing it this year or not. I know last time I remember them doing it in 2019 and 2020, they had a massive turnout. So, you know, that's one of the neat things here. A couple of years ago, we did the Fan Fest on Sunday. This year, you know, with everything going on, we're, you know, with the car counts and trying to get everything put in and situated, where the building will be open on Sunday. We won't have the concert like we did a couple of years ago, but fans will be able to come out, get in the building for free. It's a great opportunity to come get a t-shirt, check out the trade show. You know, while it's getting set up, there might be a couple vendors ready to go, but the trade show is every day starting at 9 a.m. Monday all the way through Saturday. And I actually just posted a list and a graphic of where everything is. And literally you can get everything from racing apparel to windows for your house to getting your knife sharpened in your pocket to safety equipment. It's incredible what rolls into that trade show.
Very well-rounded, yeah.
I know years ago when I had Jack Hewitt on the show, he said, you got to come down to the Chili Bowl and come to the veterans breakfast in the morning. We all get together one morning and have breakfast. And then when I interviewed Emmett, he said, Clayne, I can't even get you a ticket. Where can fans get tickets, or is this already a sold-out show?
So we do have some scattered single seats that have been returned, and there's nothing in pairs for the week. So if you just need a single seat, we do have a few of those remaining. I think there's probably less than 20 by now. If you want to come Monday and Tuesday, the reserve seat is still available, and we have those by the bucket. Of course, the race champion being on Monday. And then the pit pass is sold at the event. It never sells out. It does give you access to seating on the back straightaway. That's all first come, first serve. So reserve seats more or less are sold out from Wednesday on. Like I said, there are those scattered single seats that we do still have, but, you know, the pit pass on the back straightaway, people get up, they move around, you can sit, and they kind of cycle out. And I'll tell you, the first time I came to this event when I was working for the Racing Boys broadcast, I came, you know, a couple days early just to get a feel of where I was and what was going on and allow time for my jaw to reaffix to my face from dragging behind me looking at everything. And I enjoyed that more, really, than having a reserved seat, was being able to walk through the pits. And then if I wanted to go watch a race, I could sit down and do that. If I wanted to go, you know, check something out, I just had a great time with it.
So again, the season, the Chili Bowl will be carried live on MAV TV. If listeners don't have access to the channel in their market, there are many ways to get coverage of the event. What are some of the best?
The entire week leading up to the final feature events will be live on flowracing.com, and that is part of their subscription package. So if you already pay the $150 a year, you're set. The last three races, if you can't get MAPTV, it's going to be on MAPTV Plus, which is their app. And I understand it's, you know, you're kind of having to jump from app to app, but MAPTV has stuck with us and been with us for years and years and years. And they've really been over backwards and gone out of their way. And, you know, one of Emmett's big deals is he danced with the one that Brung is. So, you know, they've done a lot for us, and, you know, they continue to provide excellent coverage of this event.
And we're actually at the end of this podcast, we're going to go back to 2012 when I interviewed Emmett Hahn about his incredible super modified racing career down there in Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Kansas. A lot of people don't realize how great of a driver he was behind the wheel, and then also got into promoting and got this event off and going. What's your relationship with Emmett? Where did you ever meet him, and how did you guys become friends?
I actually met Donna, his daughter, long before I ever met Emmett. I worked at Southern New Mexico Speedway and El Paso Speedway Park down in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and El Paso, Texas, and I was their announcer. They came through in 2010, and I called the support division, which was the modifieds, and at that time, they would bring multiple announcers in throughout the year, and Justin Zock was the one that was there that weekend. So I called the modifieds, had a good time with it, and came in the next day, and they asked me if I ever, you know, thought about doing this for a living, and I kind of chuckled, thinking, I think you got me confused with somebody else. Like, I'm a nobody from nowhere. And I started doing freelance work for them the next year, and was out in California, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. I already said Arizona. Went up and did a show in Missouri for Scott Traylor up at Valley Speedway that year, and at the end of the year at the Devil's Bowl Winter Nationals is when I actually got hired full time. But it was a couple of races after I'd met Donna that I got to meet Emmett. And, you know, immediately it reminded me a lot of talking to him as, you know, talking to my dad and some of his mannerisms and the way he wants things done and the way he conducts business. So, you know, he was really easy to get along with right from the get-go.
25 drivers will have a shot at Chili Bowl glory after all the dust settles on Saturday night, January 15th. It's going to take a lot of luck and a lot of skill to get there, though, because if you see a sliver of daylight, you better go for it, because one flat tire or one bad decision and you're not there.
You couldn't have said it any better. I mean, there is a thing called Chili Bowl luck in this building, and, you know, sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. We've seen, you know, a lot of times there's some really good drivers. They end up buried in the soup on Saturday. We saw that last year with Jason McDougal and the absolutely incredible run that he made in Bob East number four. So there's never that given where, you know, somebody rolls in like Larson or Bell or Sammy or anybody that, oh, you just know, yep, they're in. They're going to win it. I mean, it could change in the blink of an eye. And that's at any race, but especially it seems like at the Chili Bowl.
Yeah, I think that Chili Bowl's an even playing field for everybody.
It is, and we talked earlier about the just mosh-posh of talent that shows up to this, and it's kind of the great equalizer.
And it also surprises me every year. We'll find out who's going from our local area and keep an eye on them, and sometimes some of those guys do very well, and you just keep watching them move up through the features. It's like, come on. Come on, it doesn't have to be a world-class car and a world-class driver. If you've got talent and you've got some luck, you can actually make it.
You know, and that's the thing is everybody thinks, you know, you have to be in a Keith Coons car, you have to be in a Clausen Marshall car. A lot can be done in this building, and it's been proven over the years that you can take the car that you run all summer and come in here and be competitive. So you'll see a lot of these guys that are, you know, kind of maybe the local hero or, you know, maybe kind of a, you know, not a very high budget team, but they have decent equipment and they have the driver and the know-how that, you know, the squirrel holding the nut knows exactly what to do.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, I know we'll all be tuned into this signature event to kick off 2022. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Horsepower Hour, and look forward to watching it.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I can't wait. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, guys.
Your home is your sanctuary. The next time you need appliance service, invite someone in that will treat it that way. Sorensen's Appliance Service is locally owned with 15 years of experience. Sorensen's Appliance Service also has fully certified technicians who will leave your home as clean as they found it. If you want fast, efficient, and cleanly service, contact Sorensen's Appliance Service today, 256-7766. That's 256-7766.
And as I mentioned, in 2012, I had the chance to interview super modified racing legend and Chili Bowl founder Emmett Hahn. What an amazing human being, and what an awesome story about his racing career and getting the Chili Bowl started and taking a massive risk, losing $20,000 the very first year, and still had the vision to keep this thing going. So let's go right into Emmett.
If you're in the older generation and you hear the name Emmett Hahn, Emmett Hahn meant one heck of a race car driver. How did you get involved in racing, Emmett?
Oh, when I was in high school, worked as a service station out there on I-44, and the guy that owned that service station had back then they was just old stock car flathead Fords and 37 Ford coupes and this and that. So I got to groove the tires, wash the cars. I was just around them guys, and then I'd got married, and then a year or so after I got married, a guy, they had what they called a rookie class that they started out here at Tulsa, and this guy was building one of them rookie cars, and softball season came up, and he's a big softball player, and he called me. He said, hey, he said, if you want to finish this thing, you can drive it. So I drove it three or four times, and then that next year I bought what they called a rookie car, which was an old flathead Ford, and ran in the rookie class out there for a year and a half, and then that's when they had what we call super modifieds. And then in 64, this was back, I got in that little old whatever kind of car it was at the end of 62, and then I run the rookie class from 63 and started in 64, and then that's when I put a V8 in it. I mean, I put a Ford, an old, I went down and bought a stock 289 Ford that made 270 horsepower. I thought I was on top of the world, and that was early in 64, and it's kind of how I got started.
What year did you begin to see the super modifieds appear in your area, and when did they really take over?
Them really wasn't super modified. They was old coupes and sedans, but we just had Chevy V8s was in most of them, and there's a few of us that had a Ford, but that was in 64. And then 67 is when Don Edmonds style cars came in, and that's when they was really a super modified. And so that was probably around 66, 67. I remember I started driving for Joe Cox back in the middle of 66. Chick Chicoletto was one of the name drivers out here, and he retired, and I got in that car, and that was the best car I'd ever been in, and that's the one I got my seat time in. I drove it from 66 until 69, I think, or maybe early 70, and I got my seat time. That car was a little heavy, probably a little under horsepowered, and at the time I thought that was the end of the world, but it probably made me a better race car driver because you had to really, really work traffic. Like I say, I probably got my seat time. I felt like I was ready to go race with anybody in this area probably a year and a half before I left Joe's. And I drove this one and that one for maybe a year, and then when Jackie Howerton that was driving Zink's car, when he left and went to Indy to drive USAC cars. Well, I got in the Zink car. See, I must have got in the Zink car in 71. God, I'd never been in anything that had that much horsepower in my life. So from there, it just kind of took off.
Your area was the hotbed of the nation for the super modified racing. Almost everyone you competed against night after night is in the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Lloyd Beckman, Ray Lee Goodwin, Dick Sudcliffe, Harold Leap, and more. There was no such thing back then as an easy victory.
No, I know Opperman came down here and raced a little bit, and you tell people this, and they say, ah, oh, this guy's just blowing smoke. But from the late 60s, and then they built a new racetrack in 74, but we had 10,000 people on a weekly show from the late 60s up until about 80 or 81. And, I mean, when you get 10,000 people for just a weekly show, but that's the kind of talent was here. And that was back before we had the wings and the cars wasn't locked down and we was totally inverted. So, I mean, you'd start 18th every night, and it put on a great show.
I've seen some great pictures of you in a race car, and you and Harold Leap had some epic battles out there on the track.
Leap, Harold's a great, great race car driver, and racing with him, I remember he's driving for Ray Cates in 69. He had a car that he ran at Wichita, and then they ran a Ford here in Oklahoma City. But I guess the one thing I really learned from Harold Leap was you give it 100% every lap. I mean, that guy just never give up, and that's one thing that he taught me. And we did have some battles, and it seemed like every year out here at Tulsa there was somebody that was going good. Ray Crawford, their late career, I raced with him an awful lot for championships. I know the 10 years that I drove the John Zink car from 71 to 80. I think we won 5 championships and was runner-up the other 5 years. And I was leading it in 79. I got hurt just the last 3 or 4 weeks, but we still ended up second. But I guess my highlight of my career is back in 75, we had 22 main events after the rainouts, and we won 17 out of the 22, and that was an awful good year.
One of the things you brought up when we were talking off air is where did the personalities go? The Judd Larsons, the Bob Scruffy Allens, the Jan Oppermans really drew fans to the track. Their personalities and the stories about them drew the fans to come out and watch them weekly. We really don't have any of those today when you think about it.
I think our modern-day racer, I think they watch too much NASCAR racing. They're just programmed to... you're right. We don't have the personalities we used to have. I mean, I know when I raced at Tulsa, half of them loved me and half of them hated me, but they all come to watch me, you know, and that's gone now. And I don't know if that'll ever come back. Back then, when I'd get ready to go to the racetrack, well, I'd put my uniform on here at the house and might stop by a convenience store to get a soda pop on the way. And then when we went and ate after it was over, I didn't take my uniform off till I got back home to get in the shower. And now then, the cars are in enclosed trailers. They don't know what's going down the road. You don't see a driver in uniform until about 20 minutes before he's getting ready to race, and he's out of it 10 minutes after he's through racing. And I don't know if that's part of it or what, but these fans has got to, they just need to get to know these drivers, you know, where they can find somebody that they got something in common with. You know, they used to have the same type job, or they know this guy from years back, and we're missing that nowadays.
When did you see the promoters start mixing the super modifieds with the sprint cars at one event?
Here, when they made the change, they just made the change. We never did run the two of them together, but I know when our super modifieds went by the wayside. Well, let me back up a little bit. In our super modifieds, they're the last 2 or 3 years that we ran them. We put wings on them, and of course, when you put wings on and you start locking them cars down, you need to buy a store-bought motor if you're going to keep up, and I think that was the beginning of the downturn on it. It just took the Joe Blow that has a salvage up here, it just took him out of the equation. So we lost some of our local racers. You know, even back when the Outlaws started, when they'd come to the Devil's Bowl, they had to outrun Gary Wright. And I mean, he won 5 or 6 Outlaw shows down there, and them days are gone. You know, they just don't have the local sprint car drivers for them to come in, you know, with the exception of coming into Knoxville or going to Pennsylvania. Every once in a while in California, they'll get a local guy that's competitive with them. But I think that's what used to draw the crowds, just to see how the local boys stacked up against the Travers.
You drove some really nice super modifieds for different owners. My favorite one was a John Zink special car, number 52. That was a really nice looking car.
And I got in that car when Howerton left to move to Indianapolis to run USAC. And I'd never been in anything that made that kind of horsepower in my life. And Denny Moore was a mechanic on it. I tell people he could walk around a car twice and pull more maintenance on it than a lot of them could in a week. You know, the car always finished, was ready when it went to the racetrack, and that's half the battle right there. But I remember, I guess it was the second or third time I drove it, we won the Hutchison Nationals, and back then that was our big race of the year. I think that was the first out-of-stater to ever come in and win the Hutchison Nationals in 25 years, and I think we ended up winning it about three times. But that was no doubt the best race car I ever drove. And Jack Zink, Denny Moore, Herschel Goodnight, I couldn't ask for a better group of people. And I had a great pit crew that went with me everywhere I went, so from car to car. So we had the whole package.
How did you become interested in being a promoter?
Now, that's a good question. I really don't know. I guess probably got bored. I got in the hotel salvage business when I was still racing. And that, when I say that, I was working with Holiday Inns, and when they would remodel, I would go in and buy their furniture and sell it to these mom-and-pop motels. And that was the first time that I felt like I really made some money in my life. So I really got more interested in making money than I did racing. I'd kind of accomplished what I wanted to accomplish here, and it was kind of taken away from my time making money. So that's when I quit racing. Then I'd done that about that same time as out here. There's a little Port City, a little micro track out here. I went out and leased that thing, and I don't even know why I done. Oh, I do too. My son-in-law, they had them little Honda Odysseys and go-karts and stuff, and they was running over here behind the building on a Sunday afternoon, and it was harem scarem. They couldn't score, and there's just a bunch of guys out there having fun. I thought, well, you know, if I rent that racetrack out there and run them Odysseys and go-karts and some motorcycles, and so I leased the racetrack for maybe a year and a half or 2 years, and I didn't make enough money to talk about, and the guy that I was leasing it from, I had 10 or 12 people come from Tulsa Speedway out there on a Sunday afternoon, and they'd stop by a Quick Trip and got a fountain Coke. And the guy that owned the racetrack was taking tickets that day, and there was 11 of them, I think, that came out, and he's going to make them throw that Coke away before they came in, and so they just left. And I let that little 99-cent Coke make me go out here and buy some land to build a racetrack, and that's how I ended up with a racetrack. So that tells you how smart I am. But that was back in like 85, I think, when I built Creek County.
How did the idea of the Chili Bowl come about?
Kind of back to this Odyssey thing. The year 85, when I built Creek County, I was running micros and three-wheelers and four-wheelers and motorcycles. And so out here at the Quick Trip Center where we have the Chili Bowl, somebody said, well, why don't we go out there and have an indoor race? And so I had my first Tulsa shootout in 86. And it was Odysseys, go-karts, motorcycles, three-wheelers, four-wheelers. It was total chaos trying to keep up with the classes. But anyway, we ran it that first year, and the good Lord was looking after us because we made a little bit of money at it. And that summer, I really didn't know the sprint car drivers that well, the Bobby Allens and the Kinders and these guys. And so that's when I called Lanny down at the Devil's Bowl and told him, I said, hey, we got a building up here. I said, if we could get some sprint car drivers up here, this, we can't have a track big enough for a sprint car, but we could put them in midgets. And I was telling him about it, and Lanny said, they ain't a building that big. So anyway, he came up and looked at it, and then that's when we had our first Chili Bowl. And we lost $20,000. I'll never forget it. We lost $20,000 at the first Chili Bowl, but it's got better since then.
And you went from that to record attendance this year.
Yes, sir.
That's a pretty good story.
To have as many midgets as we have, I don't know what we had this year, 269 or something, and to have the talent that we have there, a lot of people said, would you ever imagine this? And I said, not in my wildest dreams. You know, it's been awful good to us. We still have our shootout. We used to have the Chili Bowl the week after the shootout, but with the shootout getting over on a Saturday night, and then we're parking cars now on Monday at the Chili Bowl that's got so big, so now then we have a week in between them. But the shootout's it's still a great race. We just run micros and midgets there now, and we had like 800 of them this year, and so it's good for our health, because when we have these 8 or 9 classes and 900 vehicles, when we get through with that weekend, then they said, man, the Chili Bowl will be a piece of cake.
You brought up a great story on the phone about Doug Wolfgang getting in a green car. Can you retell that story?
Oh, yeah. That was either the first or second year, because we would pay them guys, them names, to come in here, and then we would rent a car for them. And I couldn't even tell you whose car that we rented for Doug that year. But I know he came down here. We wasn't even smart enough to take number 13 out of the draw bucket. So he came in and he drawed a number 13, and then we took him over there to his car, and it was a green car, and he didn't have a good week. And I'll never forget it. We're at the Nationals that summer, and I was down there talking with Doug, and somebody come up, and they said, you run the Chili Bowl. I didn't go down there. And he said, let me tell you about this Chili Bowl. And then he goes about the 13, the green car, and he's up there on the top of his toolbox. And he said, this racetrack ain't much bigger than this right here, you know. So he was having fun telling this story.
The final question, I'm really going to make you think about this one. As a driver, when you made the switch to promoter, what was it like the first time a driver came up and got in your face a little bit and said, I got a raw deal, that wasn't my fault? Do you take that different when you've been there?
Well, I get my blood pressure up every once in a while, not as much as I used to, but I raced long enough, and I was certainly competitive in my racing days, that some of them comes up with some complaints that really is not a complaint. You know, when a guy's got a legitimate complaint, I remember several years ago with my sprint car series, I let Tommy Estes just run it for 3 or 4 years himself, where I just take a little time off. And I told Tommy then, that's when he was kind of, had just retired. I said, now this one here will come up and complain about this. He'll have something to complain about every night. This one will complain a lot. But I said, when this guy comes up and talks to you and says, we've got a problem, you need to listen to him. So it don't take all that long to figure out who likes to complain just to complain and who's got legitimate complaints. But I'll tell you what, as our racers as a whole, they're an awful good group to work with.
Emmett, I appreciate you taking the time to be on the show, and I recommend to anybody listening to the show, if you want to see some great pictures of some beautiful cars and some great racing stories, Google Emmett Hahn on the internet and check out some information on his racing history. And good luck with the Chili Bowl going forward, and thank you for taking the time to be with us here on the show today.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate it.